It's season 2, episode 1. Welcome to the GAI podcast. This is Michael. Today we're kicking off with grammar, with New Year's tradition, and of course, what happens here at the GAI house. This is the podcast of the Germanic American Institute.
Welcome.
Willkommen.
We're Germanic speaking European countries.
Germany, Deutschland.
Austria,
Österreich.
Switzerland,
Schweiz.
Blend with the Midwestern United States.
Hallo.
Servus.
Grüezi.
We are here and there, and we invite you to come along on the journey. And welcome back. Traditions do vary, not just from the US to Central Europe, but of course also within Europe, within Austria, Germany, and of course our colleagues and friends over in Switzerland. This is, I think, particularly applicable how we celebrate going into every new year, or in this case, as it applies, into the new decade. I can certainly speak to some degree about Austria, but I have no clue what our friends over in Germany do. And that's why, once again, we have the triumphant trio in the room. We have Katrin.
Moin.
Moin. And we have Claudia.
Grüß Gott.
Welcome to 2020.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
Or as we say back home, Prosit Neujahr. So, cheers, New Year,
yeah.
I suppose.
Prosit Neujahr, yeah.
And in Germany, you have
Prost Neujahr.
Yeah, Prost Neujahr.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We also have things like Guten Rutsch, right?
Guten Rutsch.
We do say Guten Rutsch, which means good sliding into the new year, which,
yeah,
by the way, has nothing to do with the icy surfaces that,
yeah,
happen to happen around New Year's. But apparently it comes from a Hebraic or Hebrew word that means head or beginning. So at some point it was, you know, not or pronounced as Rosh anymore, but it became Rutsch, and that's where it came from in German.
Which reminds me, I've had a couple of requests that we do another episode on German idioms and mottos and just a disclosure of things that we usually say that are commonly not in our curriculum, which makes sense because they are very contextually driven. So we need to put another episode like that.
Sounds good.
But let's talk about New Year's Eve. What is being done in Germany? The difference between Northern Germany, Central Germany, Vienna, Austria. Claudia.
Yeah, so a couple of things in Germany. There, the stuff you drink, right? There are a couple of things, like a New Year's punch is really popular. And then there is something we also make that's called Feuerzangenbowle, which I think is also in the north, right?
Absolutely.
Those are so a punch is just similar to here. It's basically you take juices and alcohol and
whatever
things,
leftover alcohol you have,
whatever
hanging
you
out.
Have, then and you put it together. Feuerzangenbowle is something very specific, and you actually need a special tools and equipment to make that, but it's basically a version of a mulled wine, kind of ties into the whole Glühwein thing. So it's hot wine, and then you take sugar and you put it's a hardened sugar cone, and you pour high content alcohol on it, and you light the whole thing on fire. And so yeah, alcoholic drinks, certain traditions are something. Food wise, we actually lean on our Swiss and French neighbors and eat a lot of raclette or fondue during that time. So you know, but everything is really intended for people to sit and drink and eat and, you know, be merry, I guess.
Yeah, raclette, for those of you who haven't heard of it, it comes really from Switzerland, where there's a special cheese that's called raclette, and it's a cheese wheel that gets cut up and put in front of the fireplace. So the fireplace then melts it, and people had their bread and just kind of dug out the, you know,
fondue.
Raclette out of the cheese wheel.
Oh,
that's how it started. Now, fondue is in a pot.
Right. Oh, okay.
This is just, you just had this cheese wheel hanging out in front of the fireplace. Then today, today, people don't generally put, you know, cheese wheels in front of their fireplaces anymore, but we have certain raclette grills that have little pans, so everybody right. has their own pan, and you can just put the cheese in there and then grill it at the table while sitting together and talking.
Well, and I've had raclette where you do all kinds of different things, exactly. right? You basically just get a little pan and you put all kinds of different foods, and it's very similar to like the Japanese tradition of like the hibachis that you do mm-hmm. at the mm-hmm. table, right? Where it's I think the whole intent is that you sit there together for a long period of time, and you know, food is just part of it, but it takes hours and hours usually to do fondue and raclette.
Yeah, today
and
we have this concept of hygge, right?
Yes.
That's sort of modern, or maybe it's over already, I don't know, but
What is that? I have never even heard of that word.
It's Danish, hygge, and yeah. it talks about how you have to make things nice for yourself to achieve a level of wellness. So, for okay. example, the example always given is put on woolen socks, light some candles, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, ties in with Gemütlichkeit probably.
Right.
But when we're talking about raclette or fondue, I mean, these are clearly foods or dishes that are not light. You know, it's something you eat in the summer, in the winter, heavy foods, really.
Yep.
And I think the
comfort
goal,
foods.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. There's two, to warm the body and the soul.
Yep.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned raclette in its original form, with the wheel being suspended close to an open fire. I was just in New York City before Christmas, and Midtown Manhattan has Bryant Park with a winter village. It's sort of an adaptation of the Griskindl Market. And one of those vendors there actually had exactly such a contraption, where they had a cheese wheel that was essentially cut in half, suspended over an open fire, and then they scraped the cheese into a French baguette, if you will, and lines upon lines. I was just not really amused waiting in line for 45 minutes, but it looked just absolutely delicious.
Okay.
And to that degree, I think the homegrown version, quote unquote, would be to have such a contraption where you have a tiny little pan. Imagine a cast iron pan for Smurfs, and you just put this on a heating platform. It melts yep. the cheese, and then you just spread it on your bread.
Well, that, or you put other things in there too, right? You can put some meat or some other stuff in there as well. Other traditions, a couple of films are popular, right? I mean, we talked about Feuerzangenbowle as a drink, but there's also a film around that. That's a really old traditional film. The other one is Dinner for One.
Mm-hmm. Which really is not German
at
whatsoever.
All, no. But yeah, no.
It is a little sketch, I think it's 17 minutes, that is in English.
Yes.
And was premiered in Germany in the early 60s. It's two people on stage speaking English with each other, and it's about a 90th birthday party where most of the people attending actually are dead. So the butler of the lady whose birthday it is has to impersonate all these other people. Somehow it became a smash hit in Germany since the 1950s. Again, nobody could understand anything at that point. And till this day, I mean, on New Year's Eve, you can basically watch it on TV from 6 in the morning till midnight.
Yep.
It has by now been translated into regional dialects.
Right.
It's really quite amazing. It's in black and white. I am unclear why it's such a cult hit, but we here too, you know, we watch it every year.
Yep.
And I have to admit, I have heard of it. I think we talked about it last year, but I have not seen it. I get the concept of it, but I'm also equally wondering, how did this become such a smash hit? I mean, obviously it surfaced out of nowhere, particularly being English, and in the mid-50s, it makes very little sense, other than there must be some comedic or perhaps visual appeal. So we are not immune to that either.
Yes.
Right. And then a couple other traditions. So a lot of it has to do with looking in the future and wishing people good luck into the new year. And some of the good luck tokens are made out of marzipan, which is an almond paste. So you get pigs are actually lucky, little pigs, different other...
Four-leaf clovers, chimney sweeps.
Yeah, chimney sweeps. So lucky items made out of marzipan, which means you can eat them. And yeah, so kind of wishing people good luck in the new year. And along with that is also looking in the future. A longstanding tradition was making or dropping lead into water to see what shapes it would form. And it's called Bleigießen or lead pouring. And as we just found out, since, you know, we've lived here for a while, that is now prohibited due to the poisonous nature of lead and being replaced with some other items.
Like wax or tin.
Right. But yeah, I think, Katrin, isn't it where, you know, you do the lead pouring and then there are people who interpret, or you interpret the shape.
Yes. Right? Each lead pouring set comes with a little pamphlet with different objects. And right. Then, you know, you're pouring, I don't know, a cannon or something, and it means, you know, you'll buy a new car next year or something along right. those lines. But the person that pours it also interprets it. So whatever the person sees in it is the object that's being looked up. There are also virtual versions now online. You can play this online. There are apps that then don't do anything with fire or lead. Probably a little bit more limited in the shapes you can, you know, pour, quote unquote. But it's very popular. And it wasn't, the sale of these lead pouring kits wasn't prohibited till 2018. So it's a fairly recent development.
Right, but yeah, environmental impact, obviously.
Yeah, we've done something.
Nature of lead.
Yeah, we've done something similar, and it may have been lead when I grew up, and it's probably tin now or wax, what have you. And along the same lines, you get sort of the original shape before you heat it up in a spoon and drop it into the water bucket. The original shape is essentially perhaps dictating to some degree what the outcome is. I don't know. Could be.
Yeah, maybe because the amount of lead in that
correct,
original
yeah.
shape.
Yeah. And then somebody who is wiser than the child that pours it tells you what the forecast is, such as great grades next year. Well, no pressure, right? But essentially, this is how it starts.
Right.
A lot of people also eat Neujahrskrapfen, which is basically a Bismarck that, you know, you eat on New Year's for good luck, really. It's more so about the grease content of the donut that helps you or not absorb so much alcohol.
Does anybody make Berliners around here?
Yes, you can get them at Cub, and we have before.
Oh,
yes.
Interesting. Are they close to original?
Yeah.
So we just
Bismarck's.
Heard a couple of different names for the same
yes.
thing, right? Bismarck's, Krapfen, Berliner.
Pfannkuchen.
Pfannkuchen, in my interpretation, is something a little bit different, mm-hmm. right?
So, and mine as well.
Basically, it's a jelly-filled donut with a sugar, you know, with sugar on the outside version
yeah.
of it-ish.
Yeah, I think this is a really close description. If you add to it that the traditional Viennese Krapfen is a little bit lighter, it's just
right.
fluffier, perhaps.
Yes, yeah. yes, yes.
Yep. If you haven't had one, it is deadly delicious.
Yes.
One other tradition is that people at times climb up on a chair, and just as the clock strikes midnight, you jump into the new year.
Yes.
Oh, so you're not just sliding into the new year, you're jumping into mm-hmm. the new year.
That was the one time in my life where I had permission from my dad to actually be on the couch and jump off it. Yes, I do remember those days.
My grandma jumped into her 80s. I mean, it was very popular. Yeah.
You know what strikes me as interesting? I just left, obviously, the question wide open in terms of what are your traditions. And immediately, of course, we gravitate towards food and drink. Any differences in northern Germany to what Claudia just described in terms of food and drinks, or is it still Feuerzangenbowle and traditional meals?
Yeah, Feuerzangenbowle definitely. I mean, all the universities in their biggest auditorium during Christmas time always have one time they show the Feuerzangenbowle movie, and people can bring their own, you know, drinks and thermoses. Much like in the Rocky Horror Picture Show, they do bring alarm clocks then for, you know, the Feuerzangenbowle movie, which, by the way, is from the 1940s and originally was meant as a distraction from the war. So it has a bit of Nazi propaganda in it, not openly, but it's very interesting to watch. Other than that, we do a red herring salad in the north that, yeah, is traditionally eaten between Christmas and New Year's. And obviously, we're close to the sea, and there's
right.
herring.
I think with the advent, and it was, I believe, 1984 when the Rocky Horror Picture Show came out. 84, 86, somewhere in that neighborhood, I believe.
I wouldn't know, Günther.
It's all right. But yeah, it is heavily broadcast. I think everybody in Austria has at least one copy at home. We do watch it. No, we do not dress up, I think, at least. But it is a staple item in many households. Other than that, I'm not familiar with anything TV-wise that really hits us on New Year's Eve. On New Year's Day, for sure, though.
Yeah, but yeah, New Year's Eve. So we don't, as far as I remember, we don't have something like rocking New Year's Eve with Dick Clark or whatever.
Right.
I mean, right. I mean, the tradition now is, you know, Germany just has one time zone also. And a lot of the festivities are now centered around the Brandenburger Tor, the Brandenburg Gate, with fireworks and things like that. It's kind of a center of stuff, of activities and things that happen as the new year approaches, right?
Are there any cities in Germany that are particularly being looked toward for the New Year's festivities, the New Year's Eve festivities? Such as in New York, for instance. In the US, it's mostly centralized with seeing the ball drop and
I think Berlin has something, and then other than that, maybe just the larger cities in each state. And
it would never occur to me to go somewhere for New Year's Eve other than Berlin if I were in Germany.
Right. Right.
Interesting.
And but the one big thing I think that is really the big difference, and maybe ties more to what's being done in New York to here, is at the stroke of midnight, everybody pours out of their houses into the streets and fireworks are set off. So there are some professional fireworks that the cities put on, like I think around the Brandenburger Tor, Brandenburg Gate, you know, professional fireworks are set off. But people are, you know, buy fireworks. And so similar to what happens here on the 4th of July, where people shoot off fireworks at any given time of the day and the night, it all concentrates around midnight, where everybody goes outside, they do their Prost Neujahr, Happy New Year, and then people go outside and shoot off fireworks and continue to party in the street for however long, depending on what the weather is.
The legalities around that is that in Germany it's prohibited to sell fireworks except for between the 27th and 31st of December.
Right.
And then fireworks are allowed to be fired off on the 31st between 6 p.m. for the kids until 1 a.m. Right. on New Year's Day. So it's fairly regulated, but no doctor thinks it's fun to work in the ER on New Year's Eve because alcohol and fireworks just don't mix very well.
Same as here with the 4th of July, right? Because it's bottle rockets and things, you know, that fly in the air and that explode and those kinds of things. But yeah, it's still a big tradition where everybody just kind of goes outside to watch the fireworks.
And the churches make a campaign every year that's called Brot statt Böller, meaning that they try to encourage people to really donate towards
bread instead of bang.
Aid, you know, towards less fortunate people rather than spending the money on fireworks.
Right.
Yeah, I suppose in Austria, pretty much the same idea. It's not easy to get high quality, high end fireworks from regular stores. So you can't just head on out and find the big box retailers like they pop up around here, where you can spend an almost unspecified amount of money to just really outfit yourself for a significant fireworks show. That doesn't quite exist to that degree. But on the flip side, me being from Vienna, we do put on a show that is pretty much legendary every other year. And last time I was home for New Year's Eve, we were 25 miles outside of Vienna on a little hillside, and we could still see the firework just really well. It was a clear night, of course, that assisted in this entire endeavor, but just 20 minutes, give or take, of just fireworks show. And inside Vienna, just St. Stephen's Cathedral around downtown, first district of Vienna, about 700,000 people from 2018 through 2019. So in that Sylvester night, overnight, New Year's Eve, Not exactly sure what last year or this year was. The numbers I have not yet found to be published anywhere, but 700,000 people in the streets. And that's the people who are partying,
right,
starting at 6 p.m. Right. throughout the entire night. It doesn't account for the people coming out at the stroke of midnight celebrating with everybody else. And the drink of choice is what we call sekt, which we actually don't have in that fashion in the U.S., I believe.
Yeah, it's sparkling wine.
Sparkling wine.
You do?
Yeah. Sparkling wine. Yep.
I have found Prosecco, surprisingly, yes, here lately, yes, which I'm really happy about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's essentially it's champagne on the lighter side, except we can't call it champagne because it's not from France.
It's not from the region, yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. It's sparkling wine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, the drink of choice. And everybody goes out and parties and continues to eat and drink. And interestingly enough, very few instances where people really get hurt. Everything is very controlled. We have minimal police presence. I think it has increased in recent years for obvious circumstances. But other than that, it's pretty well behaved.
Yeah, I think the part about getting hurt, right? So there are a few public riots, but to Katrin's point, there's probably plenty of people who blow up something in their hand and have to be brought to the emergency room due to the pain or injuries caused by exploding fireworks.
Yeah, I think that really is about it from a traditionalist perspective. I guess hang on a second.
The part that ties into New Year, and Katrin and I were just talking about in the day. So here today, it's January 7th. January 6th is actually Epiphany, or in Germany, we call it Heilige Drei Könige, Holy Three Kings. And that is actually, that ties back to the 12 days of Christmas, right? Because here we, in the U.S., we actually talk about the 12 days of Christmas, but nobody really understands what that comes from. The 12 days of Christmas is actually the time from Christmas Eve or from Christmas to January 6th, which in southern Germany still, it is a national holiday, so people are just going back after that. And so it's the three wise men that came and brought gifts. And in Germany, there's still a tradition where you have people who sing, who are singers, who then sing traditional songs on that day. It's often like youth choirs or youth who sing that. So that's, again, only in southern Germany, and some parts of Germany is it still a holiday. But January 6th is kind of like the end of that Christmas and New Year season, and it ties into what here is known as the 12 days of Christmas.
And there's even a cake to go with that.
Correct.
More so in Switzerland and southern Germany. I don't know about Austria at all.
It's actually a holiday. And here's a little bit of trivia knowledge, if you will. When you go into some of the houses in southern Germany, Bavaria, and in many of the houses in Austria, on the door sill, on the top of the door sill, you will find KMB and the years to the left and to the right, so Kaspar, Melchior, and Balthasar.
Oh, which is the holy...
Exactly, the three wise kings.
The three wise men, yeah.
And
that's the other thing, too, right? Here we call them the wise men. In German, in German language, we call them kings.
Correct. And in any way, they show up at your house, and if you essentially entertain them, and perhaps, I don't know, maybe it has turned to donation basis at this point. Not 100% sure how the tradition has changed in recent years, but if you are welcoming them, then usually they write in chalk above the door, on the header, if you will, the year and the initials, K plus M plus B. So that's a little bit of trivia history.
To bless the house,
exactly,
right?
To bless the house
and bless the new year. Yeah. And that is something that is a lot more in southern Germany, mm-hmm, and in Austria, which tends to be a lot more Catholic than where Katrin is from in central and northern Germany.
And one other thing I think that is ginormous in Austria, particularly January 1st, everything is shut down. I mean, the sidewalks are coming up. We usually gather for a pretty elaborate brunch with salmon and cold cuts and whatever bread and leftovers there are still. And then we do listen to the Vienna Philharmonica, to the Neujahrskonzert, which is broadcast worldwide. And right after that, we follow Austria's most passionate pastime. We don't watch the Super Bowl or any kind of football game. We watch skiing, and we just hope to see some form of entertainment with people coming down the mountains.
or in Germany yet. So you watch ski sports or the Vierschanzentournee, which is the ski jumping, right? Which is always
Neuer Spring.
Which there is a New Year's event where they have a big ski jumping event. Yep. Yes. Yes.
And the family sits together and gets all involved and angry when their people don't win because it's the Norwegians cleaning up lately, I think. And this is how we spend New Year's
Day. Which for Austrians is a big thing, yes.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me.
No, I mean, Austria is really good in skiing and because, you know, it's a very mountainous country.
We have a couple of those.
Yeah.
Anything else that's significant, New Year's traditions?
I think it bears saying that really it's a big drinking event, New Year's Eve.
Similar to here. Yeah.
Yeah, probably the biggest of the year, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It is our 4th of July kind of idea. Yes, for sure.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's go from trivia knowledge to actual German knowledge. This is where Katrin comes in, and she, I think, covers the one question that is on most German learners' mind. How do you handle articles? Take it away.
Articles, right? Or gender, then, of nouns. I don't think there's any other topic in my German classes that bears more questions than that. What are the rules? Well, really, there aren't rules, or not very many. And unfortunately, what I always have to tell my students is you have to memorize that stuff. It is randomly assigned. It grew through the ages. There are some natural genders. For example, if we talk about people or animals, the genders are always according to their biological gender. And of course, we can go into a whole new debate on that. And we did actually last year. however, there are some endings that are very typical. So, for example, for masculine, anything with ling or er, us, ismus, asmus, and I don't expect you to memorize these as I'm, you know, reciting them here, they are always masculine. Alcohol, for example, is always masculine. Der Whisky, der Brandy. However, beer, the most German of all alcoholic drinks, I would say, is neuter. Unclear why. Cars, car brands, if they're about a car, they're masculine. If they're about a motorcycle, they're feminine. And yes, there's a lot of sexism in the assignment of these.
Particularly genders. When it then comes to job descriptions.
Exactly. Would you like to...
around the job descriptions, right? We just previously talked about it, that you know, back in the Middle Ages or older times, it was mostly the men who worked outside of the house. And that's why the jobs for plumber and electrician and carpenter and farmer and those kinds of names were given masculine gender, because it was the man who was doing the job. And only in, you know, I would think in this last century and were there females and women in the workforce who, and then often the ending is changed, right? So it doesn't actually get a new name, but it's often an IN or something that has to do with IN is added to then give it the female version of it. Sometimes sounds a little clumsy, but it's, As you mentioned, a lot of sexism in assigning gender to jobs.
Yeah, we probably identify today in contemporary perspectives as sexist, but I don't think there was any, of course, is no malintent. But to use an example, for instance, the pilot, right? Der Pilot. It starts with the assumption that it's masculine, but to essentially feminize the term, it would just simply be die Pilotin. So you just add an IN and the appropriate D in front of the job, if you will, and you suddenly have a feminized job description. It's not exactly, like Claudia said, not exactly super smooth all the time, but at least it gets across what you're trying to say. And this really, I think, is what it comes down to in the end. And those things are, I wouldn't say they're super difficult to learn, but they just require a little bit of an adjustment.
Yeah, I think it is important to remember, too, that if we are looking at collective terms, so if we are talking about plural, Piloten, you know, die Piloten, male form, plural, would definitely include the female pilots. However, okay, if I was talking about Pilotinnen, that would exclude the male pilots. So,
right,
really the male version still is the, you know, standard go-to.
The driver, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it's changing over time, but it's going to be a while to, you know, obviously equalize gender and language.
And I think and it's one of my essentially preambles to anything grammar in German is, yes, there are some blueprints and you can be 100% assured that there will be exceptions to the rule. Yep. That is just simply the way the language has evolved over the centuries. But as long as you understand the basic construction of it, then it's much easier to essentially compute what the exceptions are.
I tell my students, delete the word always when you're talking about German grammar, because there is no always. There are trends. However, to make gender a little bit more easy, I also tell my students, make tables. Mm-hmm. You know, on the left, you have the masculine. In the middle, you have the neuter, for example. On the right, you have the feminine. And then write them in there. Don't type them in there, but write them in your own handwriting, because that does something to your brain where you can remember it more easily. And then maybe you don't, you know, remember that Hand, for example, is feminine, but you might remember, ooh, it was on the right. So it's got to be feminine.
Right.
And some of the new textbooks also include this visualization with different colors for different genders.
Okay.
All these tables with endings, they are also super helpful. If you do have the, you know, motivation, by all means, go online and look them up. They're everywhere, and they will help you greatly with figuring out gender.
And it is one of the hardest things, I think, for people who speak English as a native language to learn and understand, because while there is gender as in he and she and gender assignment for people and for animals and certain things, it doesn't exist in objects here in the US. So it's really hard for people to understand that as a part of the language, that gender is assigned to pretty much everything. And since it is just randomly assigned, since there are no really hard and fast rules, it is something that we understand is difficult to learn. So don't get frustrated or upset if you can't remember them all. Just as Katrin said, you know, whatever works for you to help you figure out how the structure works. And yeah, just kind of learning it is the best way to do it. We, you know, sometimes even think about it ourselves. If there are some random nouns that maybe aren't German in origin, but were kind of brought in from other languages and brought into the German language, and we're like, what's the article on that? So even us Germans sometimes struggle with some words that.
100%. I mean, it's more than once that I catch myself wondering, what is the appropriate article? And much like you as a student at that point, I simply go by feel. And that essentially is usually my advice, to do it often enough until you develop a certain feel for what you believe is right. And you may be wrong, but the world is obviously not going to end. But the idea is just really to develop a feel for it. And one of the little exercises, if you will, that I particularly hand out to my level one students, completely optional, of course, is to take sticky notes and wander around your house and genderize and Germanize everything, very much to the annoyance of everybody who lives with you. But then the refrigerator suddenly is their Kühlschrank, the stove, their Herd. So things like that would certainly help you with internalizing what the article structure is, what is what, and over the course of time develop a feel for it. Just be careful when you show up to visit for dinner somewhere. Don't genderize their house.
I think for what I've seen in my experience teaching here, adjective endings and relative clauses are probably the hardest chapters in German grammar that students learn here. And of course, that is because of gender, right? Mm-hmm. If you don't know the gender of a word, it's very difficult to follow the rules for those things. But at the same time, if you go to Germany, you talk German, you have so much goodwill on your side already, nobody is going to care if you have the gender right or not.
Yeah, 100%.
Exactly. But yeah, to both of your points, right, to have that, those tricks. So if you are putting post-it notes everywhere, don't just say Bett or Tisch
right.
or Stuhl, put the article
yes.
with it, right? Because that way, as soon as you see the word, the article, so it's not just the word, the article comes with it.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that, I mean, Huber now really colors everything,
yeah.
and that really helps to get the proper article.
Yeah,
with
and
it.
Huber is the publisher of the books that we're using to
yes.
To teach.
Yes.
So yeah. So don't be too frustrated if you struggle with articles. It's something that doesn't exist in the English language. Other languages like French and Spanish
yeah.
have it as well. They have two articles. German has three. But still, the concept exists that you know that there's a gender to things and objects. And yeah, just learn the word with the article. And sorry, we didn't.
It's not our fault.
It's
we just happen to live in it.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry.
No, it yeah. can be very frustrating, and I think it almost sounds like we are belaboring the point. But I think we've all seen our level of potential frustration in that particular avenue because the articles sets up your future success because. Future cases are tied to that and all kinds of changes that come about later on in your German journey are hinging on understanding the basic nominative articles.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, many of you have, you know, studied Spanish here. Also, gender does not comply with German gender rules. And I had 7 years of French. Don't ask me about French gender and nothing to do with German.
No.
Come to think of it, while I listened to the both of you, we have, and I'm completely taking this into a different realm now. One of the things that a lot of my students are wondering about are particles.
Oh, particle?
Yes.
Yes.
Which are incredibly important and almost like a sleight of hand. They don't fulfill a grammatic function. They fulfill an emotional function. I think we should perhaps dedicate one podcast to that, or
did already
another one? No, I don't think we've really dove into that.
We can certainly do
that.
I
think we should. Actually, I think we should put an entire 2-week class on particles together.
Particular. Oh gosh. Okay.
We can also edit that out.
Duly noted. Yes.
But it's particles are important, just as important as articles. So articles follow a structure. Particles follow an emotion. So there is a nice little setup, if you will, in terms of comparison.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Did we kill all the articles now?
Yeah. Go online, find your tables, and then write them in your own tables.
Yeah, or actually, I can just also link to one in the description mm-hmm. of this podcast. If mm-hmm. you open your podcast player to the, if you will, transcription of this particular episode, I will drop a link in there to a table that I can recommend.
Okay.
And we have things going on here as well. Claudia,
as always,
what is happening?
Yeah, so if we haven't completely turned you off on learning German... Right?
We're here to help.
We call this fun.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if you like to come suffer with us, we do actually have German classes starting this week. And even though, you know, you might hear this towards the end of the week, it's not too late to sign up. So new beginner classes are starting this week, which means, you know, January 7th, 8th, and 9th, we have new beginner classes. The start series beginning, and don't despair if you missed the first session. Not a problem, still time to sign up. Then beyond the beginner classes, so once you've made it beyond the start session, which is 3 12-week sessions, we have ongoing classes, and they start again in February. So lots of classes beginning, lots of classes starting January, beginner classes, February, everything else. And then we actually have another round of start beginner classes in April. What we're also working on is summer camp. Yes, it's the middle of winter, but those of you who have children and young people in your life, we offer summer camp, 10 weeks of summer camp sessions, and all of those sessions and programs are going to be posted online, and registration for that will open as well. If you're looking for an opportunity to just casually practice a little bit of German and have a little bit of fun, we have a Freitag Feierabend, Friday happy hour, scheduled on January 24th. We meet in the GIA Ratskeller for an hour and a half for some conversation and fun and a beverage. And we always get a really good group of people together, and it just gives you an opportunity to practice German articles and particles and other things.
Yet the emphasis is on fun.
On fun, yes, in a non-classroom environment. And we talked about holiday and New Year's traditions. One of the big traditions that happens in Germany, as well as in Austria and other places, is Carnival. And it ties into the Mardi Gras here, Carnival in Rio. So there's a whole season around that. And in good German tradition, we are hosting our Carnival Tanz Party on Saturday, February 8th from 8 to 1. Check out our website at gei.org. Right? No.
gei-mn.org.
My apologies.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. Yes, www.gei-mn.org to read everything about the Carnival Tanz Party. And that is actually going to be a topic that we talk about at our next podcast, you know, our carnival and Fasching traditions, which is a whole other thing that we do in Europe in the beginning of the year. But so classes are starting, summer camp is coming, Freitag Feierabend or Friday happy hour, and then please come join us for Carnival Tanz Party Saturday, February 8th.
Fun tidbit for Carnival, despite it having to do with costumes, you don't have to be in costume if you're coming here. If you just want to hang out and have a drink or two, talk to your friends and people watch, costumes not required, but encouraged.
Highly encouraged, yes. I mean, Carnival, and we'll talk about it more at the next podcast, it's considered the fifth season in Germany.
Yeah.
It's we take our partying seriously. And
if you haven't noticed that by now.
yes. So, but yeah, that's about it. So, as always, information on our website, classes starting, partying, and we're looking forward to a great 2020.
We'll make it through winter somehow.
Yes.
That's at least the grand plan. All right, season 2, episode 1 is in the books. Claudia, thank you so much.
Gern geschehen.
And Katrin, thank you.
Immer gerne.
And with this, we are pretty much signing off. That was it. Quick, fast, painful, painless. Lots of articles. We'll test you on those. And we'll hear you again soon. Until then, Michael signing off. Tschüss.